everyone, and welcome to Retro Reminisce, the gaming podcast that basks in the golden age of gaming by delivering a weekly dose of old-school nostalgia. This is episode 15, and this week we're going to be talking about Twisted Metal 2 for the original Sony PlayStation, a popular car combat title that was widely considered one of the best in the series. We'll discuss how it popularized the vehicular combat genre in the 32-bit era, our personal memories of it, and how well the game holds up 20 years later. We'll also give you some current pricing trends in case you would like to check the game out for yourself. Before we get started, don't forget to head on over to thegamingoutsider.com and check out our video game podcasts, our articles, our subscribe links, and our social media links as well. Feedback is greatly appreciated, so use our email links to let us know how we're doing. Also, you can subscribe to this podcast via iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play Music, TuneIn, and more. Last week, we released episode 14, which covered Super Metroid for the Super Nintendo, so check that out if you have not. I'm your host, Josh Faulkner, and I'm here with my co-host, Justin Wilson. Justin, how are you doing tonight, man?
Oh, not too bad. My fingers are a little sore. My brother-in-law got me new strings for my guitar for my birthday, and I just got a capo, so I've been playing a lot.
Oh, you're getting into that Rocksmith? I know you were trying to get real big into that game with a guitar recently.
Actually, this is my acoustic. I used to play about 10 years ago or so back in high school, and I it's been sitting around the same strings on it for 10 years. It was pretty bad. So he bought me some new ones, and we got it all cleaned up and everything. But I do have actually a guitar. I'm looking at it right now next to my computer with GuitarSmith installed. I just, I've been looking to get back into the acoustics first.
I wish I would have known you needed strings. I have an unopened pack of acoustic guitar strings in a drawer in my office room. So I would have gave them to you if I would have known that, man.
If you don't need them, let me know.
Yeah, let me see if I can dig them up, man. I'll dig them up for you.
Sweet, thanks.
And we're also joined by Scott Clark as well. Scott, how you doing tonight, man?
Oh, man, I'm tired. My arms are tired. I've been practicing my air guitar all day. And
you just fly in from Rockford, and now your arms are tired?
I just flew in. My arms are tired, yeah. No, I actually really am super exhausted, man. I mentioned it on the Gaming Outsider, but I started a pretty hefty exercise routine. I'm on a mission to look sexy with my shirt off, and I'm actually kind of pleased with the results. I'm seeing some growth for the first time in my life, so it's awesome.
But that's impossible for me, man. I'm rocking man boobs, so
yeah
I'm man boobing it up. It's all right, though. I got kids, I'm married, I ain't got no one to impress anymore. Who cares?
I want to look good with two wheels on either side of me holding them as I drive down the street. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh yeah, so speaking of people with two wheels on their arms, we're going to be talking about Twisted Metal, so let's jump right into it. Now, Twisted Metal was a game that released in October of 1996. It is a vehicular combat game and released on the original Sony PlayStation, and it also released on PC as well, which many people do not know.
I didn't. It's
actually a very rare game on PC, too. Developed by Single Track, which was spearheaded by David Jaffe, big legendary game creator. So he was in charge of making this series, and it was published by Sony Computer Entertainment. Now, this game it's basically the poster child of these vehicular combat games that were real big in the PlayStation and N64 era. I mean, this is the series that really kind of started it all. I mean, there were some similar games before that, like Carmageddon and stuff like that, but this really popularized it. And there's a lot of different spinoffs. Like there was Interstate 76, I think, was one of them.
Vigilante 8.
Yep. Yes. I loved Vigilante 8. I used to play a lot of that game with my buddy Mike. That's a mutual friend of Justin and I. We used to play that game all the time when we were kids. And then there was Rogue Trip on the PlayStation. I remember that one as well. And just some other stuff like that. And Twisted Metal really made these games popular. And this is still widely considered the best series for these kind of games, even though eventually this series sort of kind of started progressively worse and worse, I guess you could say. Now, the first four games came out on the original PlayStation, and then actually there was a fifth game called Small Brawl, I think, which were basically little RC cars. And then this series jumped onto the PSP and the PS2 as well, and it continued on from there. So we're going to focus on Twisted Metal 2 because it's generally considered the best one in the series, aside from Twisted Metal Black. And that one isn't really quite considered a retro game yet, so we're not going to really talk about that one. We may mention it here and there, but Twisted Metal 2 is the king of the old school Twisted Metal games. Now, Scott, let's go ahead and start with you, man. Do you want to give us a brief overview of what the gameplay is in Twisted Metal and what this really is?
Well, sure. I mean, can I talk a little bit about, Justin's going to talk about this story, but the gameplay itself is you manning, it's third person, so you actually see your vehicle in front of you, and it's more or less an arena-style game, kind of like a Quake or like GoldenEye, where you're just dropped into an arena with a different vehicle that has its own set of weapons, which we'll get into shortly, and it's more or less last man standing, and it's hilarious because... Man, some of these vehicle designs are just insanely hilarious. And as far as the gameplay goes, you're given a set of machine guns that you use with one of the bumper buttons, if I remember correctly. Mm-hmm. And you have those, and they're basically unlimited supply of those. But then you also have different weapons that you collect on the map, like missiles and power missiles and homing missiles and other things. But then each character has its own unique weapon that only that character can use. And that's really kind of cool because nobody can pick the same character. So you can't have two people being Spectre. You can't have two people being Sweet Tooth or anything like that. So, and it's kind of cool how they were able to balance this out and make it work because, I had my favorites, but there was never any, I felt like nobody ever had an advantage.
It was balanced very well.
Mm-hmm. Some of the ones that had the more powerful weapons had lower armor. And some of the ones that had like really interesting weapons had like a longer recharge time or something like that. So, last man standing. And it had a really cool single player mode too, where you kind of went through as one of the characters to kind of make your way to the end and be the last man standing again. But that also had the multiplayer, which I think is where I spent most of my time. Either playing co-op or playing just against a buddy, and it's just so much fun. And just, the graphics at the time just were amazing. I remember driving up the Eiffel Tower and knocking that thing over, and explosions going everywhere, and it was just so cool and so much fun, and definitely the one I put more hours into any other.
Yeah, there's a lot of different power-ups that are scattered along the battlefield or the arena, I guess you could call it, too. And they also have health packs and stuff that you can pick up as well. And there's also little people that run around, too. And sort of similar to the Carmageddon games, you can actually just run those people over for fun, and the blood splatters everywhere. So this was definitely a pretty mature game for the time on the original PlayStation. And I remember mentioning before that one thing I always remember about the PlayStation when I was a kid is that it always had a really odd collection of games, especially early on. When you're used to playing Nintendo and Sega stuff, seeing stuff like Twisted Metal, it was just kind of different at the time because it was so dark and gritty, and the cover arts were always like really creepy and weird looking. And I remember Twisted Metal seeing Sweet Tooth, the scary looking clown on the front. And then I remember looking at Loaded and Reloaded on PlayStation, where it had a serial killer with a clown mask on, like blood splattered all over the artwork. And this is just one of those games that just reminds me of how the PlayStation kind of catered to more mature games than any other console that I remember. So this game always had an imprint of my mind just for that in particular. Now, Justin, this game actually has a pretty interesting story to it. So you want to let us know what the story is of Twisted Metal?
That's such a long question. Well, answer, I should say. There's a general umbrella story. Twisted Metal 2 obviously picks up where Twisted Metal 1 left off. And in Twisted Metal 1, there was a Twisted Metal competition, like Scott had mentioned, and they basically destroyed the entire area. Like, there was nowhere left to have a competition. It was just chaos everywhere. So in Twisted Metal 2, Calypso, who's the main boss guy, and by the way, can I stop and say Calypso reminds me so much of, what was his name, Pegasus from Yu-Gi-Oh?
I know nothing of Yu-Gi-Oh, so you lost me there, buddy.
Yeah, me too.
He's literally like a clone from Pegasus from you. Well, I guess Pegasus would be a clone from him. But anyways, yeah, he's very, very similar. He has that like deep kind of elegant voice. He's a classy gentleman, but he's still a bad guy. Anyways, he comes to Earth to have his competition since the other place got too destroyed. And they basically just end up destroying these towns as they race around. And each player has a completely different reason why they're racing. Calypso grants a wish to anyone who races, but it's more like a monkey paw, or anyone who wins the race, I should say, but it's more like a monkey paw or a twisted genie, if you will. Mm-hmm. Like the wishes always have a catch. You really got to be careful what you wish for.
Yes.
Heads up, we'll probably be revealing at least a number of the endings. So if you don't want to hear that, you know, sorry. Yeah. But there's like, the one girl is trying to get her brother back who was sent into space via messed up wish, and she wants him back, so she wishes for to be with her brother, and he sends her into space, and she had this whole plan where her car is actually a rocket ship, and they flew back, and they're I think they're cops, right? That was the cops.
Yeah,
one.
The brother, her brother was in Twisted Metal 1.
Yeah, yep. And they come back to do the new Twisted Metal game. So there's actually a whole universe and storyline here. And there's many different characters you can play as. Like you got your Roadkill, Hammerhead, Spectre, Warthog, Outlaw, who's the one we were just talking about, Thumper, Mr. Grimm, Sweet Tooth. And those are all from the original Twisted Metal. And then there's also Twister, Mr. Slam, Axel, Grasshopper, and Shadow, and Darktooth, who's new to the series.
Yeah, so let's sort of get into some of these characters here, because everyone has a different car. And they have a different person driving that car. So they actually give you the name of the person driving it who's driven the story. And it's like the character-driven story. And then they have their car that's sort of associated with their personality. Now, do you guys have a favorite at all?
Absolutely. My favorite was hands down Warthog. I use really? Warthog almost exclusively. Either Warthog or Spectre.
So Warthog is a guy named Captain Rogers, who was like an ex-military guy, and he drives like a Humvee sort of vehicle, I believe.
Well, what's cool is like he was in the original, and he was a Humvee in the original, but I believe in the second one it was like a tank that had like a station wagon like strapped to the top of it or something like that. Do you remember that? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, you're right. Yep.
It was just like totally goofy. But that was what I was talking about earlier. Like some of these vehicles are hilarious. But I, whenever I play games, I always tend to go for one that has a lot of armor. And to me, Warthog always had the highest armor. And I always feel like I sucked at a lot of multiplayer games. So yeah. I usually went with one that was going to let me last a little bit longer and have a little bit more freedom to go in head first and go on the offensive. So.
Yeah, gotcha.
I'd have to say I have two also, Outlaw and Twister. Outlaw can turn real sharp. You know, you can really turn around and hit your enemies really easily with him. But he doesn't have that much health and not that much speed. Outlaw's kind of what's the word I'm looking for here? The general overall character, decent on speed, not too fast, decent on attack, but not too strong.
The Mario character.
Yeah, the real middle ground.
Nice,
exactly.
Balanced and everything sort of character.
Twister, on the other hand, she's super fast, which I remember in the first map, there's like bumps in the road, and in between the bumps is items. And really the only way to get that is to use your boost. But if you're using Twister, she's actually, it's almost like a Hot Wheels car is what it reminded me of, her car.
It's like a Formula One car.
Yeah, yep. And it could jump really high in the air as when you hit them ramps. So you could pick up items a lot easier, but she didn't quite turn as much as I liked. So I played mostly with Outlaw as a kid.
Gotcha.
Outlaw had a great special weapon too. It was like that electricity shock thing that was
close range. I hated that thing playing against her.
Oh yeah.
It was rough playing against her.
Give me anything that targets enemies without effort, and I'm guaranteed to use it.
Yeah.
Well, that was why I like Spectre, because Spectre had that built-in homing missile that was like a power missile that was homing, and I love that. So,
in terms of special weapons, I always like Mr. Slams the most. Yeah. He was the guy that has like the crane, And he'll if you can catch an enemy with a right, he'll literally just pick it up and just start slamming the car on the ground. And if you can get caught with that thing, like it does a ton of damage. Mm-hmm. So if you're good at catching an opponent with that kind of grab move that he does, you can win pretty easily. But man, he's very slow too.
Yeah, driving that vehicle is miserable.
Miserable. Yeah, so my favorite is Grasshopper.
Really?
I like Grasshopper. She's sort of got like a little dune buggy kind of car, and she's pretty fast, and her special move does that hop. It's like a jump and a slam. Sort of think of like Mario's butt slam in Mario 64. Yeah, there you go, Pogs. She's the slammer. So you drive, and if you can catch someone underneath you, she'll do that little kind of just that jump and slam move, and that does a lot of damage. But I actually like to use the jump, just to jump around the map and try to dodge rockets and stuff too. It's a very agile car. So that's the one that I always use the most. Then other than that, I used to use Axel also.
Yeah.
Axel is probably the most ridiculous character in this game.
Oh, yeah.
And he's this guy who his arms are stuck in these big axles of these wheels, and his arms are just attached to two giant tires. And it's funny because he's just a really flat 2D sprite in the middle of these two 3D tires, and he looks really goofy to today's standards watching this little flat sprite move around. But yeah, his story is essentially that he's stuck in this machine and he's battling to try to get out of the machine. He wants removed from it. And if you get to his ending, he'll actually rip his own arms out in order to get out of it. It's pretty brutal. But I used to use him a lot, too, because he was pretty fast as well. But he wasn't very strong. He would die rather quick. So I wasn't always the best with him, even though I liked him.
Did you guys end up playing Sweet Tooth a lot when you were younger?
Not a lot.
He's actually – you don't actually have him as a selectable character in the game. You have to input a cheat code. Same with Minion. Minion's like the devil character in this game, and he races in this game to try to get back at Calypso for being like all powerful or whatever and like screwing him over. So that's his goal, is to kill Calypso. And both Minion and Sweet Tooth, and Sweet Tooth's like the face of Twisted Metal. You know, he's on the cover of every Twisted Metal game. He's like a demented murderous clown.
And, in an
ice cream truck. Yeah. Now they actually changed his story quite a bit. I believe it was in the fourth Twisted Metal, and they changed his aesthetic a lot, and his story was much different. And he essentially became Calypso in that game, and right. I didn't really like
it. I remember that.
Yeah, it was just really stupid, and it threw off the storyline. And 989 Studios took over that game, and they tried to kind of make it their own, and it just didn't work out very well. It was generally considered the worst game in the series. But yeah, you have to enter cheat codes in to get those two. Now, the final boss in this game is Darktooth, and it's essentially just a reskinned Sweet Tooth. you can't play as him at all, but if you have a cheat device like not a Game Shark, but what was the other one that worked for PlayStation?
I can't remember.
It's not Game Shark. Maybe it was Game Shark. Yeah, Game Shark is the one. No, I was thinking Game Genie's the one that wasn't on PlayStation. Yeah, it was a Game Shark. And there was another one, too, that you could use on that console. But yeah, you can actually use one of those cheat devices to play as him, but it made the game really glitchy, too.
I remember really hating playing as the character Mr. Grimm, who is...
Oh, he sucks.
It was just like a little motorcycle, and he was super fast and agile, but... Man, he took no damage whatsoever, but he also had like one of the most powerful weapons. But it was really hard to use because it was very quick, and you had to line it up and get really, really lucky with it. But
yeah, every time I've used him, I've died way too fast, yep. And I never lasted long. He had a really cool ending though. Mm-hmm. His storyline is essentially that he's the Grim Reaper. And he's people aren't dying fast enough, and he's hungry for souls. He eats souls. So his wish to Calypso was, I want people to die faster so I can eat souls faster. So like Justin said, it's kind of be careful what you wish for with this guy. So essentially, he created everyone in the world to start a giant war with each other. And everyone just started killing each other really fast. And he started eating all these souls faster and faster. But eventually the whole world killed themselves off. And now he had no souls left. And he just starved himself to death and died, essentially. So that was kind of one of the cooler storylines as well. So
I thought Mr. Slams was super stupid, though. He builds that giant tower and then just falls off.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, I liked Hammerheads, which is this Mike and Stu character. They're like stupid, like redneck hillbillies, and they basically wanted to fly. That was their story. Like, they want to fly. So Calypso's just like, all right, you guys are good. You can fly. And they just jump off the building and kill themselves.
They had he bought them plane tickets and they just thought they could fly. It was
But that was prior to them jumping off the he didn't give them the plane tickets yet. They just were really stupid and jumped off the building and killed themselves. Like, oh, hey, I got these plane tickets for you guys.
Wasn't one of them wearing like star sunglasses like from one of those funk bands back in the 70s?
It was pretty funny. That was probably the most entertaining ending. So let's get into the weapons. Now, there's not a whole lot of weapons in this version of Twisted Metal, but they have their uses. So you have homing missiles, which are the ones that you shoot and fly out with the nearest enemy to them. You have normal missiles where you have to actually kind of line them up and shoot them, that you can miss very easily if you're not careful.
But they're still pretty powerful.
Oh, yeah, totally. And then there's power missiles that are just much more powerful missiles. They have napalm where you can shoot kind of these napalm flames at people.
You need to be like the perfect distance away to hit somebody with them, though.
Yes. My favorite was the bouncing bomb. It kind of reminds me of the turtle shell in Mario Kart, mm-hmm. where you shoot it off and it just kind of bounces around. And if you're the unfortunate person to hit it, then you deal a lot of damage, unfortunately. They had a remote bomb as well in the game. And then other than that, there's like environmental damage as well. Like, I know there was like some devices that would shoot off electricity if you hit them, and it would hit people around them as well. And then other than that, there's just health kits that give you more health in the game. And that's it. Now, did you guys have a favorite weapon at all? Or did you just stick with the special weapons from the main characters?
Well, my favorite was definitely the homing missile.
It was the easiest.
Well, it was the easiest. It didn't do as much damage, but you felt like you got enough of them. And I'd always like try to get somebody, from a distance with a homing missile and then like try to ram them and get close enough to use like a regular missile or a power missile. Like missiles were kind of like my primary. And I usually like then once I ran out, I'd switch to the special weapon, whatever special weapon I had. And that was kind of like my strategy.
Yeah, I love the just the bomb, because it just reminded me of Mario Kart so much. And obviously I played Mario Kart before I did this. So that is kind of what attached to me. But other than that, like a lot of the gameplay is just kind of a race to get all these weapon drops that pop up. But what about you, Justin? Do you have a favorite?
I'd have to agree with Scott. The homing missiles, definitely. I hoarded them like it was a problem. And like I'd sit in the specific area where I knew they would spawn and just wait for them to come back forever. And if dudes showed up, I'd just run away and go back. And the normal missiles, I felt I was pretty decent at leading the shots. But those homing missiles, they're actually kind of tricky. It's not just as easy as clicking like you would think. You actually have to make sure you're level with them, and you have to make sure you're pointed at least decently at them. Or else they'll stray off into the ground or into a wall or up into the sky. So there is actually a little bit of a skill level necessary to use the homing missiles.
Oh yeah, it wasn't a for sure hit whatsoever. It wasn't. It was kind of like, it reminds me of firing missiles in like a Top Gun game or something like that, where you have to have just the right angle and everything like that. Like, it'll go towards them, but it's not a perfect homing missile that's going to hit them no matter what.
Yeah, don't they kind of arc a little bit too when you shoot them?
Just a little bit.
Mm-hmm. All right, so let's go to the maps. So this game has 8 different maps in it. There's Los Angeles Quake Zone. There's Moscow Suicide Slide. There's Paris Monumental Disaster. Amazonia, Firewalk. New York, The Big Leap. Antarctica, The Drop Zone. Holland, Field of Screams. And Hong Kong Crunch. Now, do you guys have a favorite stage at all in this game?
Oh, I think Paris is going to be my favorite, just because I loved blowing up the Eiffel Tower and then using that as a ramp.
Paris was my least favorite.
Oh, really? I loved it. I did also like New York, though. That was the one where you get on the rooftops and stuff, right?
Yes. That one was pretty hard, because if you fall off, you're instantly dead. Yep. But if you just kind of drove around a bit, like a lot of the AI opponents would just fall off their cells. So if you could survive long enough and just kind of hang out, you could kind of win just by default, which was kind of funny.
That's what we call the Luigi win.
Yeah, there you go.
Luigi wins by doing nothing.
The death stare. Yeah.
Yep. So the reason why I don't like Paris is because the streets were so narrow and there's so many buildings everywhere that I just felt like I was ramming into buildings and getting – it was like the Austin Powers effect where I'm like stuck in the in between like the roads and just backing up and going forward and like hitting buildings. Like that level drove me nuts. My favorite level is actually the Moscow suicide slide level. And the reason why is because like most like multiplayer games and shooters, I like those small maps where it's just total chaos. You know, like some of these bigger maps where you're just kind of driving around looking for people. I have less fun in those. I just like where everyone's just kind of thrown together in a small arena and they just go nuts and everyone's just blown up and dying real fast and respawning and everything. And that's why I like that level so much, because there's no like instances in the game where you're just kind of driving around looking for someone. You're just constantly being shot at and running into each other, and I thought that was really fun.
I did like Holland as well, because I think that one was bigger, but it was wide open.
Yeah, it's just a big field, and there's like a couple like windmills that you can get on top of.
Yeah, so it's another way to be kind of chaotic, but a little bit more wide open. And I have good memories of Antarctica as well, too, because I remember there being like these trenches almost. So you could kind of shoot some enemies from above, or you know, get a drop on them behind them when they're passing by and they don't see you. Man, so many good memories of this game. So good.
Yeah. Antarctica actually has you can fall off the iceberg. You're driving on big icebergs. And you can fall off of those and die instantly too. But I noticed that if you are on one spot for too long, the floor will actually fall from underneath you, and you could die that way also.
Yep. It's important to note too that when you die in this, it's not like respawn. You die, you're done. You're out.
You know, unless you're in tournament mode where you get two lives for the whole tournament, and that's it.
Right.
What about you, Justin? What's your favorite?
I liked Antarctica a lot, just because it was kind of more of a wide open, and the ice was really cool. But I'd have to say my favorite was New York, and that's just because the Easter egg. In New York, you can fire a certain missile at the Statue of Liberty, and depending on which one you fire, it'll either be a skinny or a fat Statue of Liberty in a bikini.
Oh, wow.
I didn't know that.
There's some sort of Easter egg in almost every level. In Moscow, you can blow up everything. Paris, you can blow up the paintings.
And the Eiffel Tower.
You can hit napalm at them. In Amazon, there's statues you can blow up, and that'll open doors. New York, we talked about. Antarctica didn't have anything. In Holland, you can plant a remote bomb on the windmills. And in China, you can just blow up buses in the tunnel. So not much in that one. But some of them did have map damage, which is something a little new to this, you know, early era of a game.
Yeah, totally. Now, Hong Kong is actually essentially Paris, but they play Oriental music and the streets are much wider, I notice. But it's set up very similar to Paris. And I actually like that level better because you get the pros from Paris, like Scott was talking about, but the streets are much wider and you don't get stuck and hit things as much as before. So I really like that one. And just because we didn't really talk about it, Amazonia is a fire level, and it's basically all these small kind of platforms that and bridges that all connect to each other, and it's all surrounded by lava. So if you go into the lava, you don't die instantly, but you start taking a lot of damage. And if you're in there long enough, it'll kill you. And that level kind of drove me nuts too, because I was always getting thrown into the lava and trying to get myself out of it. And when you're playing against the AI, it can be really annoying. So when you hit that part of the tournament, I kind of got a little frustrated with it.
That was also the level where you fought the final – well, not the final boss, where you fought Minion.
Yes, that's his level, yep.
Oh, man, I have so many good memories of playing co-op with my brother and just sweating bullets. My palms were just like so clammy because we were just intense and trying to fight this guy at the same time. It was so hard, but it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, there's also three bonus levels in this game too. Now, we haven't really talked a whole lot about the multiplayer yet. We will hear in a minute. But the multiplayer mode, if you played the challenge mode for multiplayer, there were three extra levels. You had to unlock them with cheat codes. One of them was called Suicide Swamp, and it was a stage from Jet Moto, which was also designed by Single Track, the same developer. There was one that was Assault on Cyberbia, and that one was essentially just a level from Twisted Metal 1. And then Rooftop Combat from Twisted Metal 1 was in here as well.
I love that map.
Yes. So in New York in Twisted Metal 2 is very similar to Rooftop Combat in the original Twisted Metal. Mm-hmm. So you can play two Twisted Metal 1 maps and a track from Jet Moto in here as well for that multiplayer mode, which is really cool. But speaking of the multiplayer, let's go ahead and jump into that. There's two multiplayer modes in this game. One of them is Challenge, which you essentially just go one-on-one. If you play single player, you can add bots into the matches and just pick a map and just have fun and play. But if another person jumps in with you, you can only do a one-on-one battle. Now, there's a co-op mode as well where you can go through the entire tournament mode with two people working together, which is definitely the best way to play this game, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. That's where the memories are made.
Totally.
Yeah. So it sucks, though, because Justin and I mean, we live really close together. Not together. We live very close to each other. And it sucks because we didn't really get a chance to sit down and play this like we originally wanted to before we reviewed this. So I just kind of played it by myself for the most part. But my best memories of Twisted Metal were sitting and playing this co-op mode, and I think you can probably agree with me on that one, Scott, right?
Oh, absolutely, because my brother wasn't as big of a gamer as I was, but this is one that we totally bonded on, just playing together and going through and trying to beat a game together, because there weren't many games at this point that you could play through with somebody. It was always like take turns.
Yeah.
And the idea that we could actually play through together, split screen, and work together was such a new idea at the time, and it was a really cool experience for me to play with him. So many good memories.
Yeah. What about you, Justin? Did you play this a lot as a kid with co-op?
Oh, yeah. Remember in the past episodes I've talked about how my family didn't let me play any games that were violent. So when I saw this game, it blew my mind. I was just amazed. This is probably one of the first games I played next to what was the one? We did an episode on it. The motorcycle one.
Oh, Road Rash.
Road Rash, brain fart. Other than Road Rash, that probably one of the first ones I played with violence in it. And also the kid I used to play this a lot with, I used to get babysat by his mom when I was younger. He used to love racing games, and I absolutely hated racing games. So this was one that we really agreed upon. So we spent many, many hours playing this game. We actually sat down and got all the endings and recorded them on VHS.
Oh, nice.
Wow, that's cool.
Do you still have the tape?
No, I don't. He actually kept it. It was his.
Wow, that's cool. Funny. Yeah, like I said, with like Vigilante 8 and stuff like that, Justin and I have a mutual friend named Mike. He was actually like my best friend from middle school and then elementary and everything. And he lived very close to me, and he'd walk over to my house all the time. We'd play video games after school, and these vehicular combat games were what we played together a lot, because Mike's always been a big car guy, and he loved racing games and everything. Mm-hmm. So, and I never really cared for racing games that much. So, like similar to Justin's buddy, we would sit down and we would play this game all the time because it had cars in it, and we both liked it. And same with Vigilante 8 and Rogue Trip. And I mean, we rented all these vehicular combat games, but it all started with Twisted Metal. We played this game a lot as kids as well. Now, before we talk about how well the game holds up today, I just want to talk a little bit about the graphics and the difficulty in the game. Now, how well do you guys think the graphics hold up today? Not good, am I right?
Yeah, no, not at all.
No, I mean,
the cars are very boxy. The buildings are just boxes with just, you know, textures painted on.
There's screen tears. It's just a nightmare.
Yeah, the textures tear real bad. The frame rate isn't the best. The game still plays pretty well, but it's definitely a game that has not aged well.
It's definitely a step up from the first one, though.
I was just going to say that. Yeah.
I mean, it looked great for the time, but looking at this today, especially after playing the PS3 Twisted Metal game, it's just like, whew, this is rough.
even the PS2 one, even Twisted Metal Black, looked pretty decent. I mean, you know, we're two generations ago now, even from that one, but man, I'm actually looking at a screenshot and a video of it right now, and I'm just like, I remember this game looking so much better. It's just, man, nostalgia is a tricky thing.
I felt the exact same way when I booted up. I was like, it's not this ugly, is it?
Yeah, like you see actual like seams in the environment, like in the roads and stuff. Like it's just it's crazy.
And everything's kind of gritty and dirty feeling, and it just
Now, one thing I do like want to praise is that the artwork in this game is actually pretty cool.
With the story cutscenes,
the cutscenes and the ending and everything. You know what it reminds me of is remember in the 90s how MTV had an animation like hour or whatever, and they had Beavis and Butthead, and they had the Max and Aeon Flux and all that stuff. Like the artwork reminds me of one of those shows from those old MTV era cartoons.
I can see it.
Yeah, and everything's like dark and gritty and just kind of freaky looking in the art designs, and everything's just told in like these sort of comic book size kind of styled panes. And the voice acting is terrible. Like the guy who plays Calypso, his voice, you can tell he's having some fun with this character.
Yep.
But everyone else is it just sounds like just some really terrible voice acting. Like they just hired someone off the street just to read some lines, and it's really, really bad.
Yeah, it's not.
Now
it's
let's talk about the difficulty in this game, because this is where things start to kind of fall apart for me. Revisiting this game, I had a hell of a time playing this thing. Like I don't think I won a single round when I played this game revisiting it. Did you guys have a problem with the difficulty in this, or is it just me? Because I think the AI is brutal.
I'd make it about two levels and then I'd run out of lives. That's where the password system really seemed to help me out, because you can, you know, get to those levels with three lives again and just kind of pick up where you left off, like you took no damage.
Yeah, so I was trying to go through all of the maps in the challenge mode just to just kind of refresh my memory of all the maps. And man, I tried really hard, and I used a variety of different vehicles and characters, and I could not win at all. It just felt like everyone was doing so much more damage to me, and I was just shortly chipping away at all the enemies. And
part of the strategy for me was to just run away and let them take each other out for a while.
I would just stockpile weapons.
Yeah,
I would kind of take pot shots at people and then drive away and just hope I would run into a health pack. But later on in the game, some of the stages, when they throw the health packs down, they're a lot harder to get to. Like you have to hit ramps and like fly through in between buildings and stuff in order to reach them. Mm-hmm. And I just remember struggling to get them, and it was a lot harder.
And the health packs regen based off from the difficulty of level that you selected. So if you're playing easy mode, you know, you're going to come across frequent health packs. But then again, you can't beat the game on easy mode. So, you know, that's kind of a loss heads up there.
I hate when games do that.
Yeah. This game, I thought, did something very well for its time that we're just not going to see anymore. And that's passwords, passcodes. Like they really did a great job with them. You could increase your bullet damage. You could get to different levels. You could get different characters. You could get maps. Like that's just something that we're done with, you know, with next gen gaming and DLC and all that.
Well, remember looking up magazines and looking for cheat codes to find to enter into certain games back in the day?
In like Walgreens and stuff, flipping through magazines and when your mom's shopping.
Bring a pen and paper with you and go get the cheat CC book and just write them all down.
And this game had like invincibility codes and stuff too, so if like you really sucked at it, you could just go put god the invincibility mode. Old god mode in there. And
do you guys remember this game also had like inputs that you could do mid game to do other features? I don't know if we didn't talk about this in the mechanics of the game, but you had the ability to fire missiles backwards, or there was a jump, or there was even one that allowed you to do a shield around yourself, like it was like left, right, down, or left, right, up, or I can't remember what.
I remember that.
Those were totally in there, and if you use those, it almost became requirement to do those to get through the really harder areas. And it as a kid, I thought I was cheating, but no, it's actually built into the game, and you're supposed to do that. So maybe that's why you had some difficulty too with that, if you didn't remember that was there.
Totally. I did not remember that was there.
Yeah, I forgot about it till now too. Dang it. I'm salty. I want to play it more.
the first two Twisted Metal games were definitely really tough. As the series kind of progressed, I felt like it got a bit easier. But I recently revisited Twisted Metal Black, and that was one I didn't really play a lot when I was a kid. I kind of skipped out on that.
I loved it.
Man, that game is dark.
Yes,
that
is.
Yeah. That is some dark stuff, dude.
Especially the videos. Oh, man. Yeah.
And they use live action, and man, like the Sweet Tooth videos are like really demented. And I played as a character that was like She was like a bride, and she was out to like find her husband or whatever. And she was just killing everyone that was like she was dating, and she had like a bloodstained wedding dress on, and it was insane. Like, it was a very dark game, but that game was really tough too. I remember playing it, and I revisited that one recently too. And yeah, to me that game was just as hard as this one. But if you play the new one, Twisted Metal, Twisted Metal on the PS3, I breezed through that game pretty well. It had some more modern mechanics and made it a little easier to play. And I have Head On my PSP also, which was the mobile Twisted Metal game. And I didn't think that one was too hard, too. And when I play Twisted Metal games, that's usually the one I pop in and play, because I remember having a good time with that one, too.
Did you guys like the music in this game at all?
No, it was just generic rock music, more or less.
There was one I was playing and I heard it and I just started busting up laughing. There is a metal, all the music in this game is just like generic metal, but there's one that is literally just the can played metal, and it's freaking hilarious.
It's in the Paris level, I think, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
And he's the only like, one that
I was dying laughing. Yeah. I forgot all about that.
The only one that really stands out differently is the Hong Kong level. They just play like some kind of generic like oriental music. Uh-huh. And I remember when I hit the Holland map, I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to get some kind of like goofy clog dancing music or something here. And it was just like, just like metal music. But yeah, all of it felt very generic. And as the series moved on, they tried to do better with the music. I know like the 3 and 4, they hired Rob Zombie to do the soundtrack.
Yeah. Heck yeah. Twisted Metal Black had one of the best soundtracks for its era, I thought.
Oh, really? I don't really remember the music in that one much, but yeah, no. So not a big fan of the music in this game, but I always splice music into the podcast. You guys will hear it as you're listening to this. So. All right, guys. So let's get to it. How well does this game hold up today for you? Justin, let's start with you, man.
Graphics, not so much, but gameplay. One thing we didn't talk about, the fact that you have to hold the down button to reverse. Did that throw you guys off a lot? Yeah,
there's no reverse button. Yeah. If you want to, the gas button you can hold up and then you can just kind of, you know, move left and right while you're holding up. And I hate that. Like, I don't like that at all. I remember old school racing PC games, you had to do that on the keyboard. But this game, at least you could use the square button to do the gas. There's no brake button at all. So you have to jam that down button, and if you're trying to turn and you're like really getting into the game, you'll start backing up and screwing yourself up on accident. And I thought that was really janky, and the cars didn't handle very well either. Like, they would sway too much left and right, and it'd throw me off, and I'd fall off platforms and buildings and whatnot.
That was really the only problem I had with the game personally, was the button layout was kind of a little wonky, in that you didn't have the reverse. But other than that, I thought the gameplay was fun. Like Scott said earlier, it's really pretty well balanced. There's no character that is really better than the others. But I saw that you're not a big fan of Grimm, Grimm, was it, that you didn't like?
Mr. Right. Grimm, yeah.
Mr. Grimm.
Yeah. Yeah, other than him, all the characters seem to play really well.
Yep, totally.
What about you, Scott?
So much nostalgia for this game, but it's one that I have a hard time recommending to people to go back and pick up and play, because it looks and just feels like a PS1 game. I mean, and
yeah,
it's just, I mean, there were a lot of good ones, but I think the action-y ones like this were you know, suffered a little bit just because they didn't, you know, like you look at like a retro game, like an 8-bit game or a 16-bit game, and those seem to age a little bit better because they look old.
It's the style. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, this is a game that was trying to be realistic in its time, and it just doesn't hold over very well. But with that said, it's fun to go back and try it out. it's just to see how goofy and what a ridiculous idea this was. But it totally worked, and it just felt totally 90s. It really did. Just everything about it just screamed 90s, and I love it. If you do want to play one, I would recommend checking out Black on PS2, because I think that one actually looks really good. And like Josh mentioned earlier, those cutscenes are dark, and they disturbed me when I was younger. And that might have been like one of the first times I remember there being like vulgarity, like the F word in cutscenes. Like, that was just so brutally said. The way Sweet Tooth delivers that line just like set me off. But
Did you guys know that they actually filmed live action endings for Twisted Metal 2, but they thought they were too graphic, so they didn't put them in? And later on Twisted Metal Head On Extra Twisted Edition for the PS2, they ended up splicing in them old cutscenes that never got seen.
Oh, that's really interesting.
See, I have Head On, but I have the PSP version, not the remastered sort of PS2 version. So I'll go back and take a look at those. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
For me, I was never a huge fan of these games to begin with. I actually remember having more good memories of Vigilante 8 for some reason. But that being said, when I go back to it, these games definitely brought back a lot of memories just because I used to play this style of game a lot in many different series and whatnot. This game's definitely rough to play today. I don't think it holds up very well at all.
No.
Now, like you guys said, I think Black is probably the better game to get into if you're going to jump into a Twisted Metal game. But the second game in the series is still generally considered one of the, if not the best, Twisted Metal game out there, but I think Black has it beat for sure. But the controls are just really hard. Like, they didn't really think out the controls, and you have to remember that this was made in the age where the PlayStation analog DualShock controller didn't come out yet,
right?
So it was all digital inputs and everything and no analog sticks, and they never updated this game for the DualShock. So like some of the games like Resident Evil 2 and stuff like that got. So, I mean, it's going to play a little rough just because of that. And the game, the AI is really, really brutal, even on the easy difficulty. And I find it harder to have fun in this game today.
Well, the mini map was pretty stupid, too. Like, I mean, it wasn't too hard to read, but it was literally just a gray box with squares, with colored pixels. And the yellow one would be this character and the purple one would be this character. But there was no, I mean, like I said, just gray background. That's it.
Yeah, gotcha. So yeah, still a fun game. I mean, the arena style gameplay is still, you know, pretty much well done. It's just, it doesn't control very well. It doesn't look very well. It's got a rough frame rate, some technical glitches, and it's just a little rough around the edges to play today. I would definitely recommend checking out Black first if you have never played a Twisted Metal game before. All right, so let's get into some pricing trends for this game real quick, just in case anyone out there is listening to this has not played it, and maybe they're a PlayStation collector and they want to check it out. A PlayStation copy of this game comes in two variations. They have a Greatest Hits game, the green label Greatest Hits, which was like their budget line of like high-selling games. Then they have the standard black label version as well. If you get the game, the Greatest Hits version, that's the more common version you'll find. The game's about $10-$15, not too expensive. A little more than I would be willing to pay for a game like this because the game's very low on content, but it's not very expensive. That Black Label version is going to cost you about $20, maybe $25, worth a little more. So just keep that in mind if that matters to you at all. If you're actually looking to play the PC version of this game, it's very, very rare. So rare, in fact, that I very rarely even see it listed on eBay. I mean, even the rarest games you can think of are always on eBay in some capacity.
I didn't even know that it existed, seriously.
Yeah. The last time I saw this pop up on an auction, they wanted like $80 for like the jewel-cased PC version. So it's a very, very hard to find. So if you want to play this game, that's probably the more collectible version, but it's also something that's probably not going to play very well on your modern PC, and you're probably going to have to put a lot of work into getting it to play. So I would probably just stick with a PlayStation copy if I were you guys. The game is also available on the PlayStation 3, the PSP, and the Vita, and you can play it on the PlayStation TV also. It's on PlayStation Network. You can get it for $5.99. Very inexpensive way to play it. So if you're interested in playing this and you don't care about that full-blown PlayStation collectible version to have in your collection, that's a very easy and cheap and affordable way to play this game.
Totally.
We'll be right back.
right, so that'll be it for this episode of Retro Reminisce. Thank you, Justin. Thank you, Scott, for hopping on and talking about this game with me. I very much appreciate it.
Oh, absolutely, man. Anytime.
Yeah, it was fun. Thanks.
Tune in next week where we'll be revisiting a new retro game for you guys. Head on over to thegamingoutsider.com for more and email us at feedback@thegamingoutsider.com if there's a game you would like for us to cover or to give us any general feedback on the show. We hope to see you next time. And as we leave, I would like to remind you all to visit your local retro shop, grab a golden oldie, and game like it's 1989. See you guys next time.
Bye.